Spark, stories from advocates for global change, a podcast from the Swiss Young Academy.
Welcome to today's episode of Spark, with a new perspective on social media and its influence on democracy. I'm Zora, and today I'm here with Julia.
Hi.
In our last episode, we talked with Anna Jobin about how complex the discussion around the responsibility of social media is. We also briefly touched upon the subject of false information, which is going to be the focus of today's episode. I only just became aware of how hard it is to prevent and fight the spread of disinformation. And today we have a guest who is doing precisely that difficult work.
Yes, I had the incredible chance to speak to Sophie Timmermann, who is a journalist working on fact-checking. She is the head of the fact-checking unit of Korrektiv, that is a media outlet with the overall goal of strengthening democracy. The team consists of around 15 people, most of whom are journalists, and they expose disinformation and educate people on media literacy. In addition to journalism, Sophie has also studied international relations and earned experience working for the United Nations and the Red Cross. So let's listen to the conversation I had with Sophie. Hi, Sophie. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Could you please introduce yourself and what you do?
Yeah, hi, Julia. Thanks for having me on this podcast. My name is Sophie Timmermann. I'm a journalist working at Korrektiv, a nonprofit investigative outlet in Germany. And I'm the head of our fact-checking unit.
So you studied journalism and international relations, and then you worked for the UN in Geneva. But what has inspired you to then really delve into this field of journalism?
If you've been to Geneva, then you know it's a very international environment, and it's also a very newsy environment because all the big organizations are there and institutions, especially in the humanitarian field. And I got in contact with a lot of correspondents from around the world, and I was also part of press briefings, and that really inspired me. So I always knew I wanted to do something with maybe media or journalism, but that really kind of gave me that final push to explore and delve more into journalism as a career. And that's when, after my time in Geneva, I decided to do my master's in international journalism. And I had the chance to spend a semester in Denmark, in the US, and then also in Wales, where I specialized in war and conflict reporting. And I also, that's where I kind of started delving more into the field of mis- and disinformation, where I work in now.
So today you work for Korrektiv. Can you explain to us what exactly that is?
Yeah, so Korrektiv is a non-profit investigative media outlet in Germany, the first of its kind in the sense of being a non-profit. There's a US outlet, ProPublica, which was kind of the example for how Korrektiv was set up. The idea being that it is driven by nonprofit and also kind of gives time for investigative stories that might take longer or require more resources. That's something that didn't exist in Germany before. And we have an investigative team that focuses specifically on investigative stories, but we also have a team dedicated to local news, climate news, and then also we have a fact-checking team that is dedicated to researching mis- and disinformation. And I'm head of that fact-checking team. We also do lots of other stuff around media literacy, which is obviously very important and also connected to our work. But fact-checking is kind of my area of expertise.
Can you describe some typical examples of your work, like what your everyday life as a fact-checker looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. So every day, every morning, we start our day with an hour of monitoring. So we go explore different social media platforms, Telegram or Facebook, Instagram, X, TikTok, and see if there's any misleading or false information circulating. And then we discuss these things and see if we want to do a fact check around them. And we usually have three overarching criteria that we use. So one is obviously being how widely shared is this claim among different platforms. So, you know, how many retweets or views has it gathered on TikTok or Facebook? And then we also look at, you know, how potentially harmful is this claim? So specifically, mis- and disinformation is usually sometimes targeted at specific groups. So if we look at migration, so migrants always being a very vulnerable group, that might also be an argument for us to do a fact check. And then thirdly, also we look at the news angle. So if it's like something that is really newsy or like breaking news, that could also be an argument for us to do a fact check around that topic. And that's kind of how we start our day. And then we go about our fact checking work, our research. Maybe something that is interesting for you to know is that our editing process is very rigorous. So also maybe compared to other outlets. So we have one person always doing the fact check, and then we have two separate people always looking at that article before it's being published. So the first editing round is mostly around, you know, checking the facts and making sure everything that is put in the fact check is also backed up by proof. And then the second editing process is mostly circled around looking at the structure, revising the flow, and maybe grammar and just the some of the beauty steps along the way. And then we're publishing our fact check. And then we have also a video format that we use in different collaborations with different fact checking organizations around the world. So that's also something that may take part in my daily life as a fact checker.
You mentioned now several times the terms misinformation and disinformation. What exactly is the difference of those two?
Yeah, so maybe to start out with a different term that we don't like, but I'm going to repeat it anyway, because a lot of the times in media and also in speeches of politicians, you hear the term fake news. And we don't like this term so much. And when I say we, I refer to me as a fact checker, but also the fact checking community more widely. Because if you look at populist politicians like Donald Trump, for instance, he uses the term fake news to discredit other people or, you know, reputable media outlets. And essentially, it's also not very nuanced. And that's why we like to or prefer talking about the terms misinformation and disinformation. So misinformation, just plainly being false information, but that is spread without ill intent. And then disinformation, which is mostly what we focus on in our work, is the deliberate spread of false information. So the person, the actor spreading this type of information knows that it is wrong and has an intent to distribute regardless. And there's, I would say, essentially two reasons why you want to spread disinformation. It's political or it's financial. So political, if you think of the war in Ukraine, for instance, and Russia's interests for its own war propaganda, that might be a reason for them to spread certain information that is not true. Or financial reasons to make money off that information through advertisement or to sell products.
Could you expand on how each of those terms, misinformation or disinformation, how they are different in their impact in the public trust in media?
Yeah, so sometimes it's not so easy to clearly distinguish between mis- and disinformation, because it's not always entirely clear if someone knowingly spreads false information. Now, through our own experience and also through monitoring different accounts and channels every day, we know certain actors and we know that they, for instance, continuously spread false information. So this is where we clearly can say and pinpoint, hey, that's something that we would call disinformation. But in other circumstances, like a very fast news cycle or breaking news situations, like after October 7th, for instance.
Here, a quick remark on the 7th of October. She is referring to the attack of Hamas and other Palestinian militant groups in Israel on the 7th of October, 2023.
There was a huge flood of pictures and videos spreading on Twitter/X, for instance, and people were just so eager to know what was going on that they were also spreading footage and videos that were actually from a different place altogether or not even from that year. And so that's something that I would consider misinformation, because people didn't really know that what they were forwarding from a friend wasn't accurate. So that's, I think, something that is kind of a challenge, underlying challenge, that some people just spread false information, but they don't actually know that what they're spreading is false. Now, when it gets to the media and our own consumption, it gets a bit more tricky because a lot of the actors that spread disinformation, they also target mainstream media, as we call it. So media outlets, legacy outlets that have been there for a long time, you know, be it in Switzerland or in Germany, reputable media outlets. And they, you know, make the statements that those mainstream media don't report accurately. And that's also one reason why they erode, you know, public trust in journalism, because they keep making false statements about media reports not being true when that's actually not the case. So in order to counter this, I think, A, we need a lot of transparency in journalism about our own research methods and how we conduct our research or come to certain conclusions. But we also have to make sure that people understand that there are certain actors out there that want to deliberately harm media reports or media outlets because they have their own very unique interests.
So I want to follow up on what you just explained. What is the role of Correctiv in this process of misinformation and distribution and consumption of information?
Yeah, so we started out in 2014 as Correctiv, as the news media outlet. But then in 2017, that's when we started our fact-checking efforts. And actually, we were the first dedicated fact-checking editorial team in Germany. And as to this day, we are one of the biggest ones. So just us dedicating an entire editorial team to combating disinformation, I would say, is quite unique. But we've also seen, and that's great, a lot more news outlets taking interest in that subject, creating bigger teams or making space for journalists to also focus on misinformation in their work and publishing reports about that. And that's extremely relevant, as we've seen this year, for instance, and also last year. There are very targeted disinformation campaigns directed at us in Europe against Swiss people, against German people, for instance, from Russia, as we've seen. And that's a campaign that is, you know, seeking to influence our own opinion about what's going on in Ukraine, for instance. There's many different examples that I can provide you with. So it's very important to understand the risk of disinformation, the methods, and also equip people, you know, themselves with the tools so they can understand and spot mis- and disinformation so they don't get fooled by it.
In your opinion, what are the best tools to combat mis- and disinformation?
So we always talk about, you know, pre-bunking and debunking. Those are kind of the two terms that we use. So debunking is something that we do. Obviously, mostly it's fact checks. So there's an information that's already out there, and then we debunk it through a fact check. And then there's also the idea of pre-bunking. So before it gets to that point of there being false information, that you equip people with the tools. So you inject sort of a vaccine. that's like the analogy sometimes used. And so they have the tools to spot disinformation before it's already out there. And I think those things, so for instance, through media literacy campaigns and, you know, when you teach digital and information literacy to certain people, that's how you can think of pre-bunking campaigns. So that's what we do at Correctiv and also in cooperation with many different fact-checking organizations in the German-speaking area, but also in Europe and worldwide, through media literacy campaigns, through investigative reports that we do, through videos. We also did a podcast. So there's different formats and channels that we use to go about our work.
So you explained how Correctiv actually works on debunking this mis- and disinformation. And now I'm wondering, how does this product of your research actually get to the target audience?
Yeah, that's an excellent and very important question. So first of all, to start with, we have our website where we publish all of our fact checks. They're open source. We have a steal our stories policy. So if you want to republish our articles, you can, you know, just, you know, make sure you give us credit. And ask us in case you want to use certain videos or photos. Then obviously we have dedicated social media channels on YouTube, on Instagram, on TikTok, where we publish our fact checks, but also have video formats to have also multimedia formats to reach different age groups. But then also, obviously, the overarching question is how do we reach the people that actually consume this type of bad information? And that's also the core of what we want to do and what we want to achieve. We have, and I think that's one of the most important corporations we have a cooperation with Facebook, so Meta. Not just us, but I think over 100 fact-checking organizations around the world have a cooperation with Facebook that if they encounter a claim on Facebook that is misleading, they can attach the fact check that they've published around this claim. And users that have published this false claim or commented or engaged will receive a notification that there is a fact check now about this topic and that they can read. Now, the important thing is that this Facebook post will not be deleted. And I think unless it's illegal content, it's very important, I find, that this content doesn't get deleted, but that people actually have a chance to engage with the fact check and perceive different information out there, you know, different to what they believe in their own worldviews, for instance. And I think that is one of the good examples and corporations we have where we actually engage directly with users and people who have spread mis or disinformation that we have fact-checked.
That's very interesting. So do you see any future developments with different collaborations, for example, with other platforms such as TikTok or X?
We would love to. We are very open and we continuously talk with all major tech platforms. We would love for YouTube or TikTok to have fact-checking labels. So far, YouTube specifically doesn't want to have fact-checking labels, which we don't understand. I think their policy for now is, you know, they focus more on pre-banking, which is very important. We also did a media literacy campaign with TikTok, for instance. So we are in contact with, you know, these major tech platforms, but obviously we would love to see them engage more about the actual claims and posts on their respective platforms, for instance, by adding fact-checking labels. But they so far aren't very inclined to do so, I have to say.
So misinformation and disinformation both have the potential to distort public perceptions and influence political opinions, often in ways that can undermine democratic principles. So how do you see mis and disinformation in social media affecting democratic processes?
Yeah, absolutely. So there was a survey done recently in Germany by the Bertelsmann Stiftung, and 81% of the respondents said that they believe disinformation is a threat to democracy. Now, I think that is a huge, huge number. So I do think that people are aware that disinformation can be a threat to democracy. And we have seen that there were certain targeted campaigns trying to influence elections. And I think that is very dangerous because I believe, voting is one of the core principles of a democracy, and every citizen should be equipped with the facts in order to make their own decision at the ballot box. And if there are certain actors out there trying to influence your vote by providing you wrong facts, and that is one way how those democratic principles and processes can be distorted through disinformation.
How would you say the way we consume information influences the spread of mis and disinformation?
Yeah, it's major, the way we consume information nowadays. I mean, there's so many different social media platforms on themselves, but it's become much more fast-paced. If you think of a TikTok video, for instance, for younger audiences, they spend maybe 3 seconds on a video before they skim through and onto the next one. So our attention span, you know, for me, scenes has become much shorter, and there's just some topics out there that are very complex and they can't be summarized obviously in 3 seconds. So moving away, and also it's a challenge for us journalists to create new formats where we educate people on those social media platforms who don't want to, you know, read a 10-minute long report on our website, but maybe want to consume our content more through video. So through algorithms and also echo chambers on social media platforms, it has also become very dangerous for certain people to end up in certain rabbit holes. You know, I mean, I have to say there are certain nice rabbit holes on there on TikTok if you're into cats or, I don't know, like gardening. And if you, you know, keep following and watching those specific gardening videos, you might find that entertaining. However, and that is something that we have also experienced and tested ourselves recently with the elections, if you start watching and consuming certain videos that have and contain false information, you end up being confronted with a lot of those videos. And that's where it gets very problematic and also amplifies the danger and spread of mis and disinformation. If you're in that rabbit hole and your algorithm is centered around videos that are very emotional and highly misleading, because that is what catches our attention.
Now we've heard a bit about what Correctiv in general does and its mission. And can you share with us an example on work that you did and its actual impact on the distribution of information?
Yeah, so we have different editorial teams at Correctiv. So one of them being obviously the fact-checking team that I'm part of, but then we also have the investigative team. So the investigative team, for instance, did a very, very influential report about a meeting that took place of members of the far-right AfD in Germany, so Alternative für Deutschland, the neo-Nazis and other sympathetic business people. And at that meeting, among others, they talked about the mass deportation of people in Germany. And as a consequence of that report, thousands and I think even millions took to the streets in Germany to protest for democracy and against extremism. And I think that was one of those moments when you realized, wow, journalism really does have an impact. And investigative journalism requires resources and time, but if done right, it can really, really hold power to account. So that's, I think, one of the very influential reports we did at Correctiv. Within the fact-checking team, we did a lot of research around a Russian disinformation campaign called Doppelgänger that has been active for a couple years now. And the name Doppelgänger comes from its tactic and its cloning websites like Spiegel or The Guardian and publishing fake articles on them. So obviously they use a different URL, but in order to, you know, make it seem that those are reputable media outlets, they try to publish and spread fake articles that steer negative sentiment on Ukrainian refugees or the war in Ukraine in general and Western aid. And this has been going on for years, and the EU and the US actually put sanctions on some of the companies that were behind that, but nothing has changed. And we continuously published some reports about this campaign and also how it used, you know, hosting providers in Germany. And we disrupted some of the campaign because one of the biggest hosting providers shut it down. And I think that, again, was for us a very special moment, because it showed us that, you know, dedication and also kind of continuing to follow stories makes sense and is important.
How do you cope with the ongoing challenge of misinformation, knowing that it's a constant issue that cannot just be solved?
It's a very good question. And honestly, I think if you want to become a fact checker, you need to understand that it's not always going to be, you know, happy days, because as you very rightly mentioned, you kind of start your work when this bad type of information is already out there. So it's all about the timing, you know, time is of the essence. And you want to be quick and kind of debunk the misleading or, you know, missing context. But obviously, at the same time, you want to do rigorous research and go through like a very rigorous research process before you publish your article. So that's something you have to be just very patient. And also, as you also rightly mentioned, there's, you know, too much, you know, mis and disinformation already out there. And we have to be very selective about the type of things that we actually debunk and fact check. So that is always a very important discussion we have in the team. And lastly, what is also challenging, you know, we attract a lot of people that don't like our work, obviously, because they are the ones maybe spreading the wrong information to begin with. And so also we receive a lot of hate in our team and also threats partly. So that can be very tricky at times. But, you know, putting all that aside, I think also, you know, speaking about the survey where a lot of German respondents said that they think it's a threat to democracy, it's such important work. And I think it helps that we have a great, very dedicated team of journalists who are very convinced that the work they're doing is important and that we put out as many fact checks as we can to combat this problem, at least in some way. But looking forward, I think, we have to all work together, not just us fact checkers, but society and politics, and also ideally that help every citizen out there, no matter if they're 90 or, you know, 5 years old, to not get fooled by disinformation, because that's when the actors lose their own power, when people start spreading wrong information to begin with. So I guess that's my hope, and that's why I keep doing my work.
Thank you very much, Sophie, for telling us about your work as a fact checker.
Thanks so much for having me, and it was a pleasure talking to you about all things related to fact checking and disinformation.
That was Sophie Timmermann from the media outlet Korrektiv. I'm really impressed. It is such inspiring work that she does in fighting and preventing mis- and disinformation. For further reading, we will link the reports that she mentioned in the show notes, available in both English and German.
So since the recording of this interview, Meta has actually cancelled their fact-checking activities in the US. And Sophie Timmermann is increasingly worried that the same will also happen in Europe soon. Nevertheless, it inspires me how the team still keeps fighting mis- and disinformation despite all the backlash coming from different organizations and involved players. And it is very sad that they even experience threats, and yet they keep doing their work. And somehow, they have to get used to the fact that they can never battle all the wrong information out there. And this makes pre-bunking and being media literate even more important in my eyes.
Yes, definitely. And I was surprised to hear that a big majority of people do think that disinformation poses a threat to democracy. And yet so many big platforms still refuse to work with fact-checking organizations such as Korrektiv.
This raises the question even more if we need governmental rules and regulations that protect us from this mis- and disinformation. And interestingly, both Anna Chopin from the last episode and Sophie Timmermann highlight that in times of global crisis, it is essential to have independent media who both do investigative work and also fight the spread of mis- and disinformation.
Unfortunately, in current times, it is very hard for independent media outlets to survive. And in order to do their important work, also Korrektiv depends on donations. If you want to support their fact-checking efforts, there will be a link in the show notes. In the next episode, we will hear from Tommaso Venturini, a social scientist. We will talk about why disinformation spreads so well, and that maybe we shouldn't call it fake news.
Until next time. Bye.
Bye.
Spark. Stories from advocates for global change. A podcast from the Swiss Young Academy. Hosted by Julia Knuchel, Tanish Shingi, and Zora Althaus, produced by the Podcast Schmiede.